Good afternoon, or any time frames which are through the country and around the world. This is Lena Life. How's everybody doing? And I'm having my another edition with a very special guest, Tina Ferguson, about whom I will speak in a second. But before, I never can resist to thank BBS, fantastic team of people who are making us so uplifted, no matter whether it's cold or hot outside. So I will move along with introduction of my very interesting guest. I will inject a little bit of my own personalization, I would say, once I've been reading her book. For some reason, I was visualizing a beautiful vase which is made of crystals with the different sizes and shapes. It's very clear, it's very strong because crystals are extremely strong and yet so elegant with total bottomless qualities. It is my greatest pleasure to introduce Tina Ferguson. Tina, how are you? And if you can add a little bit to my introduction, then after this we will follow with your life and with your book and some other issues which I hope we will enjoy to discuss and our listeners will enjoy to listen to. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes, I am an intuitive and medium, and I work primarily as a spiritual teacher, helping people connect to the truth within them and connecting them to realms that help them uncover the truth that's always there, always available, always asking to be discovered. I've had a varied background. I've been writing since I was a kid, have been accomplished in business, had a very successful marketing agency until a few years ago when my heart said, okay, it's time to follow your own heart. And you know, similarly to how I work with people today, help them uncover the truth, I had to uncover the truth for myself.
Well, I frankly was totally amazed because you have such a tremendous spectrum of your talents and abilities. You have this title, which, if I pronounce correctly, Queen of Dreams. That's how your clients know you, but also around the world. And at the same time, in addition to what you just mentioned, you really had a touch of tremendously dramatic experiences, including your personal, I would say, nearly catastrophic illnesses. You did experience some challenges on the business field, and you, at the same time, you reserved in such a fantastic prosperity of your intuition, sensitivity, glamour of your emotions. How all of this you managed to carry through your life?
You know, it's interesting. One of the things that you're looking back at what happened and the catastrophic experience you're talking about happened back in 2006 when it, just as you shared, is a business failure. And for me, you know, failing was not really part of my life story. Sure, I've had failures. You know, I had a first marriage that didn't work and that sort of thing, but I'd never really failed at a level where I felt like I was out of control and things were happening to me and I didn't know what to do about them. And it was truly the best thing that could have happened. I can tell you that now, you know, 4 years later. At the time, I felt so fragile, just so raw and completely overwhelmed with everything. It had a way of slowing everything down to where I literally could only focus on one step at a time. Because if I did anything more than focusing on, you know, the first step was, okay, pay the people that we can. The next step was, see what else, can happen when we talk to people. And I literally was one step. And it was by grace that I literally just surrendered. I wasn't trying to run around trying to figure things out at that moment. It was literally taking each step as it came. And as I did that, what started happening is more and more miracles started to happen. I started having different experiences. I don't want to keep talking and go too far into it, but that really is how I was able to deal with it. Is literally I just stopped trying to live in the future, and I started living very much in the present moment.
Tina, please don't feel that you're talking for too long, because I will jump in. I like to have this as spontaneous as possible, this dialogue. In fact, I like to come back to what you've been just telling us. I'm personally myself extremely intrigued, but in a profound sense of the word, how one can pull out from the tragedy. Because it is a journey, and it is a journey which I believe so many unexpected qualities kicked in. And what you just described, I frankly can relate to myself, but in a totally different experience. But the journey, I think, a little similar. I'm talking about loss of my parents. I suddenly felt like a child. I suddenly felt that I'm crossing this bridge not as a grown woman, but as a child. So did I expect this journey happen to me? Absolutely not. Was I prepared for this? Perhaps yes, perhaps no. But what you just said, that you that you didn't drown. You said that you've been facing all these challenges. And in fact, if you kindly can go back and talk a little bit about these bumps, about these discoveries, rediscoveries of who you are. I think that's what it is all about.
Yeah, I can appreciate that when we fall into the abyss, or I call it the ditch. When I speak with people and I say, oh, I went into the ditch, it seems to be an idea or phenomenon that most people can relate to, whether it's a death, whether it's a failure that feels like a death. It all is part of something dying. And when I went into that place, I really had no idea. But one of the things that really stayed with me is that when we were creating this event, this business thing that failed, everything came together so beautifully. It was like this dance, and we were able to get the hotel we wanted and the speakers we wanted. Everybody was available for the day, and I'm extremely intuitive. And until that time, I had not really been outwardly acknowledging it. I knew I was. I knew that that's where the source of most of the business success I had came from. But it was always this thing that I was hiding, that was secret. And I remember a point in time during this event where people who had promised to do certain things were not doing them. And I had a flash of this vision of standing in a circular like a circular room with doors all around me. And all the doors were open, and in this vision I saw all these doors slamming shut. And I felt terrified. I'm not using that word loosely. I mean terrified, because this was a $500,000 event. It was a lot of money on the line, and we did not have backers, sponsors. It was all us. And I saw that vision, and I became so terrified and so paralyzed. And what started happening was exactly all those doors started shutting. And I just felt so betrayed by my intuition, because I had felt pulled to create this, the door. I mean, it was so effortless getting all of, I mean, literally what would take people a year to do, we did in 2 weeks, and things were so effortless and so easy. And then all of a sudden this vision is slam, 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 and I was terrified and, oh my gosh, what's happening? And I felt really betrayed by my intuition, this gift that had helped me my entire life. And I didn't do anything with it at the time, because I literally did not have the emotional capacity to do anything with it. So I just kind of stuck it off to the side. You know, the day came and went, the event didn't work, and I felt angry. I felt so angry that my guidance system, the part of me that had, you know, always been there for me, always guided me, always took me to the highest road, always, you know, I'd get a, you know, if I needed a job, I'd ask for a job, and, you know, I'd, you know, have one 3 days later. And all of a sudden, this thing that I had trusted so much was in my thinking was not working, and I couldn't trust it anymore. And I was really angry about that. And I found that after the event came and went, and I was just doing step by step, I was so numb. I was literally going through the stages of grief. You know, I was. You know, angry, I was numb, I couldn't think straight, I was scared, I didn't know what to do, I felt overwhelmed, you know, all these things. And literally, there were days when I couldn't even get out of bed. I was so overwhelmed by the mess. And like you were saying about being a child, I very much felt like a child. I felt like I was ill-equipped to deal with it. And part of the reason why was because I had never experienced it in that grand of a way. And now in hindsight, I know that I had never tried to do something at that level before. And so I tried this big thing and I'd done things for clients, but I had never done it myself. And so there was a lot of stuff going on, and at the same time, the nagging in the back of my head was, how could you let me do this to myself? You know, basically, you know, I had this divine connection, so intuitive, always been guided, and I was angry. And I wasn't, even though I was responsible, I felt very, very responsible. I was angry first at my spiritual guides and my spiritual a team or God, if you want to call it that. I was very angry in that way, and then what I discovered is even though there were some days where I just wanted to sleep all day. I was so depressed and just wanted to, you know, just eject out of life. But what I noticed is as long as I would keep moving, I'd drag myself out of bed and I would get a sense, you know, my intuitive sense of, go check your computer. You need to check your computer. And so I'd go, you know, drag myself down and, you know, go check my computer. And then my intuitive sense of, you know, open this email. None of the rest matter. And so I would do that, and bit by bit, I was cared for. So I had this this conflict going on inside of me of, you know, seeing all these doors slamming and being angry, you know, at this divine system that so-called guided me to this devastation. And at the same time, the same guidance system was guiding me to, if you want to call it redemption or salvation or whatever, it was guiding me to what would care for me as well. So there was a lot going on at that time. And honestly, I wasn't completely there. I mean, when people write about, you know, going through tremendous pain, tremendous loss, you know, certainly losing two parents, losing, you know, in my mind, my stuff was always about trying to create good things for other people. So this event was all about bringing people together to believe in something better for business, that you can build companies and you can, you know, treat your employees well and you can thrive while doing so. And so, you know, for me, it was just, you know, it was just the death of an idealism. It was the death of a dream of bringing people together for something greater. And I really didn't have a lot more than literally just trying to take care of keeping it together.
We certainly will go to your book because it's a continuation of your life. I cannot thank you enough for sharing this because it is so open what you said. It's incredibly substantial. There is no simplification in what you expressed, and yet it's so sincere. I was trying to make a few notes while you've been expressing those very powerful thoughts and transformations which took place in your, what it called, healing. I wanted again to share with you one particular phenomena which I noticed with my own friends, clients, students. It is so much easier sometimes to do things for others, and it is so much more challenging to do things for ourselves. Would you agree that that's one of the perhaps hidden cause of our frustrations and perhaps some our mental illness?
Well, I believe that a lot of us, you know, especially, you know, we think about as kids, we're always told to think of others. And if we put ourselves first, like, you know, let's say you're at a, you know, birthday party and you're like, oh, I want to, who wants a piece of cake? Oh, I do. I want one first. I mean, that's so discouraged. I mean, it is so much in the DNA. And I've spent so much time, I mean, literally, Lena, years looking at this because I am, you know, my mind is very strategic. And I could see that I could help other companies grow very fast, you know, double, triple, quadruple. And yet I couldn't seem to do it for myself. And, you know, you're asking about frustration, and yeah, definitely frustrating. And you know, well, what's that all about? You know, I can do it for them, but I can't do it for myself. And, you know, it wasn't until I was able to really unravel and get really clear and be very truthful with myself that I could really look at the situation and be objective about it. You know, I feel like the frustration comes from, you mentioned mental illness, and, you know, the intellectual or mental plane is all about thinking and how things, you know, work structurally. And I do believe that we can have, fritz on, you know, the wires get crossed in there, because a lot of times we apply one idea or philosophy to something else. So it would be kind of like taking a medical idea and applying it to agriculture or farming. And a lot of times these seem like they're completely logical when they're really not. And for me, you know, when you're talking about the frustration, what I realized is I'm really, really good, in the business. I'll talk from the business perspective. From the business perspective, I was really, really good at taking something that was already working and making it a lot better.
I'm sorry, interrupting you. You might have new clients because we are having just a bit of a self-centered note. We're just in the process of developing our music entertaining company, where we indeed have a message, concept, and approach, but we need to get somewhat business ground. So who knows? Maybe we will collaborate with you. But I'm sorry I interrupted you. It was just a very seductive moment for me to introduce this possibility. Please go on, Tina.
That's fantastic. And I realized, you know, I'm really, really good at taking something that already exists and seeing greater possibility for the person, for the company. I realized over the last few years of really getting clear and being able to see very, very clearly, you know, different than, you know, before, where I was extremely intuitive, but I wasn't necessarily mentally very clear. And what I got to see is, oh, okay, I'm applying this idea that I can do anything because I've been able to, you know, anything I decided to do, I would just put my mind to it and things would happen. And I was applying that logic or that idea or that, you know, quote unquote truth to everything. And then all of a sudden I had this event and it didn't work. And all of a sudden the truth of me as a person was rocked. I was like, oh my gosh, you know, I guess that's not true. And what I got to see is, oh, okay, I work best with something that's already existing, where the energy is already created. And then I am, you know, the energy I bring as a spiritual teacher, as a person who works with businesses that have something greater to do on the planet, what I bring is the catalyst energy. And so, you know, the whole journey of understanding that the failure guided me to an opportunity to look at what was true. You know, what is true? Who are you? What do you do best? What, you know, what are you here for? You know, what are your gifts? And being able to see those very, very clearly. But as long as I was, you know, kind of walking around in the fog, you know, regardless of, you know, how great my intuition is, I was still going to have these experiences where I was thinking, what I call erroneous ideas, you know, these thoughts that are not true. And the only thing that I can share from what I've gone through is the truth is what heals. You know, the Bible talks about it. Many other great religious doctrines talk about the truth and what is the truth, and not, you know, what is your subjective truth, but what is the truth? How can you look objectively at whatever it is, and speak the truth? And for me, the truth was, you know, I didn't want to do certain things. You know, the things that I was gravitating toward when I did that event, those were not really things that I love to do. You know, I love the idea of getting people together. I love the idea of holding space for a greater idea in business. I love the idea of being an inspirational catalyst to believe in something greater than exists on the whole for business. But was my passion, you know, oh my gosh, I love business and I've got to do this? No, not so much. And I didn't know that at the time. I didn't know that until after all of the devastation and, you know, the crisis and all of that. And it was the truth that delivered that clarity. It was you know, being truthful with myself and saying, do you love this? Do you not love this? You know, what works for you? What gives you energy? What doesn't work for you? What depletes you? And step by step, really walking that path and being courageous enough to look at the truth.
You expressed such a bouquet of thoughts. I literally so impatient to ask you so many questions. However, I try to be as focused as I can because what you're expressing has this invisible balance. And I'm trying to be as pointed as I can, not simplified anything, and yet to bring as crystal truth as I can. No wonder I felt that you're like a crystal vase, because you are so clear crystal with all complexities of your emotion and this description. For some reason, I am thinking of one great musician, and I'm sure you heard his name, Vladimir Horowitz, who called Last Romantic. And at one point, he amazed the world where he gave an interview and he said that I'm always something close to that. I'm always guarding my emotions with my mind, even when I'm performing. Of course, spontaneity and complexity of moment of performance, another dimension, because you cannot replicate this. It's just for that precious given moment. However, his own feeling about himself as a person, as a musician, and as a performer definitely fits this cliche. No matter how incredibly emotionally and passionately interpretation would be, it always has this crown of mind, crown of intellect. It came to my mind because I think you're one of those very rare people who indeed feels this proportion. And it is so much easier to say, well, you went through this crisis and that was your key to another dimension, to the opening of the true life. What is tremendously heroic, that not only you did not fall apart, but you fully experienced the pain. God gave you this courage, strength, and what you're calling absolutely correctly, it's the truth to look at oneself. This is the most difficult, most probably most challenging we can face, because we're talking about ego, we're talking about all these kinds of things, which indeed you mention in your book, which we still did not get yet into our conversation, but I hope we will. So to complete our first segment of, I would say, Air Duet, I wanted to ask you, could you possibly pinpoint particularly triggered thoughts or emotions which help you to shift from this incredibly tragic, hopeless feeling to the road where you started to feel the light, the meaning, and feeling all this fullness of your gifts?
You know, Lena, the thing that I haven't mentioned that you know from having my book is that I really went to, like, the darkest space. When you talk about feeling all of it, oh, yeah, there was no escaping it. But I really, you know, one night I felt like I just got to a very black and white place, and I was like, you know, very much a child. Going back to that, what you said earlier, I felt like a child that had really messed up big time, and I had to clean up the mess. You know, like a little kid, you know, in a kitchen that's like, oh my gosh, I've got to clean up this mess so I don't get in trouble. And one very dark night, I just was like, oh, I get it. I know, you know, I've got a huge life insurance policy, and I'll just leave the planet, and then all of, you know, my life insurance policy will take care of this giant financial mess that I've created. And that seemed like the answer. It just, you know, in that very bleak moment, that seemed like the answer, and that felt good. And okay, I finally had an answer, because that's what my mind wanted. And I fell asleep, and I woke up to this, if you want to call it a spiritual presence. And that spiritual presence, you know, basically was like, you know, good morning, you know, and you know, I was so foggy at the time, and this spiritual presence, you're asking for three emotions. You know, this presence held so much love.
Wow, that's unbelievable. And that is like a self-love.
It was beyond.
It was beyond.
It was amazing. It was amazing, and the invitation was to write a book. And so the emotion of love, and the emotion of generosity.
You
know,
yes,
the generous spirit of, you know, hey, you know, would you like to do this with us? And, you know, having a focus, you know, just having something else to think about besides the mess, and courage. You know, those were the ones that came to you know, pull me out of it.
So it was great fortune of external intervention, which gave you somewhat extra courage and extra dimensional feeling of who you are.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. Definitely. In fact, this presence said so simply, a duck is a duck. Why would you want to be anything other than what you are?
This is incredible thought. And I must confess that the beautiful proof of your tremendous spiritual success and validation of what you went through is so beautifully expressed. It is so clear. There is no doubt in anybody's mind or emotions that you are capable to have these memories of your most passionate and yet very real, close to the limit of human abilities, struggle, and that you are the winner on that struggle. And now you're definitely facing all this, all these collections of emotions with your experiences and your, obviously, your life, but it is on such a profoundly different level. I'm not even talking about self-confidence, more security. I'm not even talking about this. I'm talking about close to fullest realization of your potentials as a human being.
What it really said to me, and I've seen this in sessions that I've done with clients, you know, people are always amazed at the different messengers who come for them, you know.
Wow. I like to have a little musical intermission. I usually have this in my programs, and I cannot imagine better, just a better moment of reflection on our very special conversation with my most gifted person, author, thinker, Tina Ferguson. We will continue in a minute. After, we will listen to music which called Meditation, composed by Julian Lampert. And we're back with my very special, extraordinarily gifted guest, Tina Ferguson. Her abilities literally have no limits. As I mentioned before, her another name as Queen of Dreams did not limit her from being executive coach, experienced strategist. She was featured in Dallas Morning News, Dallas Business Journal. I'm frankly mesmerized to what extent one qualities are adding to another, and perhaps being a little bit presumptuous, her secret is because she's open to any kind of emotions and experiencing her own life journey, is not only prepared to share this and help others, But I think she is one of those rare individuals who can have recipes virtually to any situations in life. I'm inviting again Tina Ferguson with her book, which we didn't even have chance to touch yet. Tina, even your book is decorated in a such unpredictable way. It's very coquette. It's very elegant. The title is Must Be Present to Win. Extremely serious title. And yet the picture of it, as I mentioned, very engaging. Somewhat a little bit for the child's eye more than for the adult's. Can you tell us about your book? And then we will go into some details, which I was intrigued during my reading of your book.
Well, you know, it's funny, Lena, when I was going through my healing and all of that, I had this little cartoon character float through my mind. And just this idea of Queen of Dreams came to my mind. And I thought, what? I'm a Queen of Dreams? It just didn't even make sense to me. It really didn't at the time. But that character led me, you know, was part of what helped me find the levity again, the joy again, the childlike, you know, fun and silliness and, you know, not taking myself too seriously. And that book was a culmination. Actually, I wrote it 2 years ago. I wrote it in January of 2008. And I wrote it in a month. And I wanted to chronicle and acknowledge every single person who had come. You know, yes, they were coming to me to, you know, coach and, you know, for me to help and for messengers to bring answers. And at the same time, I realized very early on, each one of them was coming to heal a part of me. So in the giving, there was also a receiving. And I wanted to honor every single person who had come. I wanted to share the stories. I wanted to share the tools that had helped me come back to life, that had helped me get out of the ditch, that had helped me figure out and still figuring out, you know, fully, you know, who am I?
Well, the testimonials in your book are overwhelming. I read a few stories, and those people actually, as you pointed, probably created this beautiful diffusion between your knowledge, your abilities to share, and your tremendous craving, human craving, to interact and to help with these people who are incredibly profound in their own rights. So I think they didn't just came to you as a purpose for getting a therapy. I think it was a tremendously important life experience. And I would guess that some of these clients at first perhaps became, if not close friends, but became part of your own life.
Very much so. That was very much a pattern of people showing up exactly wherever I was, and, you know, perfect, you know, pristine mirrors. And you know, some of them would come and, you know, one session, and they would completely change their lives. Completely do what they truly had in their hearts. And then some came, you know, and did become very, very close friends.
Just a few, perhaps, childish questions, because we agreed that we faced our childhood perhaps in the different rights, but at the moments of our self-realization. I notice you have those semi-empty pages, which I absolutely adore, because it gives you this a little breathing space. It gives you a moment of post-thinking. And those pages I'm talking about have only three stars. Is it symbolic? Is it just your design? I attached my own symbolism to those three stars because I was so intrigued by this. But Is anything behind of those stars, or are making something which are not there?
You know, I did not have a specific idea about that. My book is published by our own publishing company, so in publishing terms, self-published. And I actually formatted that entire book myself.
Oh,
and,
I see.
And so, you know, the three stars, that just came to me in a vision, and I whatever comes to me in the moment, I follow it and trust that's correct and true, and I don't really think much about it. And so you're asking about the three stars, and I put them in there because they just came to me.
May I impose with my own interpretations of this?
Absolutely.
I hope you will not be insulted. The first star goes for the soul, the second star for the mind, and the third one for the money, because you're very good business judgment. So I feel, but I can't be excused, because the top of those stars going for the soul and the mind, and the money on the bottom. So I hope I will be forgiven for that.
I love the idea of that. You know, as soon as you said the three stars, I was like, oh, wow. I never thought about it. I could have put five on there, but, you know, what came to me was very much three stars.
People in your life, I was overjoyed to read about your husband, Mark. I had the pleasure to speak with him for just a few minutes. But you just have a friend, and you have your partner, and I'm sure you have your twin, or they call it soulmate. Are there any other people in your life who made not only difference, but you feel that it is your spiritual and intellectual family?
Yes, and you know, it's funny, because that melting down of that event was reflected in my life as well. There were a lot of relationships that went with that event. My a father figure went with that event, a best friend. All of those things fell out of my life at that time. So, you know, in addition to having this business crisis, I had a lot of support leaving as well. So lots of emotional stuff going on at that time. And at the same time, what I kept focusing on is the people who stayed. There were two good friends that stayed. In 4 years, there have been three rounds of supportive groups that have come in. There was one group that stayed together for 2 years, and we walked together. We were trying to figure out, you know, clarity together, and then that, you know, beautifully and gracefully, you know, dispersed. And then another group stepped in, and we walked together for another year and a half, and that beautifully, when the time was done and the energy was fading away, it dispersed. But the two people that stayed, you know, very much in the tribe, so to speak, they are. In fact, I've seen both of these people in the last couple of weeks, and they sustained my strength. They brought so much strength during that time, and still do. They really still do. And in addition to, you know, my soulmate Mark, my husband, my son, and you know, my family, my mom, my mother-in-law, you know, the people who are left in my life see me for who I am. And they love me for who I am. All my flaws, all my greatness, whatever it is, they're okay with whatever that is. And I really don't have anyone else in my life that doesn't match that description anymore.
Well, frankly, you have you have more than you need, because I think an old-fashioned proverb says that if you have one great friend, that's all you need. You definitely expanded your family of friends and this not only backbone but the front bone as well. May I allow myself to read something which is in your book, because you mentioned something of having a trio of feeling what is the most important qualities in your friends, and how you feel that certain groups of friends appeared and disappeared. And you mentioned number three, which is perhaps is not direct symbolism, but immediately brought me to something which so beautifully said in your book. So I will allow myself and I will read that. You said, the power of love, the power of love meditation, the power of love spiritual power tools for living. I was very much taken with this very gradual spiritual increase of your self-expression.
That's so funny because, I really can't take credit for that. The presence that came to, basically save my life. The one that I shared earlier, a duck is a duck. Why would you want to be anything other than what you are? When I started writing that book with them, and I'll call them a group of teachers of the light, if you want to call them that, because they're not in the physical, they're non-physical beings. They said that they wanted to name their book The Power of Love. So I went, okay. Because I thought, oh, that's, I don't know if that's, from a marketing perspective, I thought, well, I don't, isn't there one out there, and isn't that already done, and, all these things. And they were very insistent about how they wanted it and how they wanted the book, divided into four sections and all these things. And so that shift is me adding something of me to it. So that's what you're sensing. You're absolutely right. The meditations were meditations that came from the book that I channeled with them. And then the last one was, me adding my little spin to it. So, yes, you're absolutely accurate and true for that.
Mm-hmm. In fact, you just touched upon critically important thought. You're absolutely correct. There are so many with a great passion, sincerity, written books about spirituality, more religious, less religious, but it's not a secret that we are in a very global realization of where we stand as a humanity. And I will interrupt myself and say that this most incredible interview we have, we didn't even touch the world issues. And yet I feel that your life is more than just an example. Your life is a tremendous symbol of not only what's possible, of not only absolutely extraordinarily talented of human abilities, but also reality of it. You did not just express theory of, let's say, meditation, of healing, certain perhaps techniques or certain approaches. You are expressing this not only because you survived that, but because it is a reality. I felt personally that it was almost graphic emotional descriptions of your experiences. This is really rare. And I like to read something which is, I'm sure you wrote in your book, which has to do with common ideas, you call it. And you expressing sets of feelings, and some of this we discussed today. But I like particular one because it can be very easily misinterpreted. You You wrote, know that by gently working with yourself, you can return to the true you. The word gently can be very misleading because many people think gentle is weak or slow. And they don't necessarily associate this with a very profound, very natural approach and much more successful as a process than very short, aggressive, shortcuts process. If I got this right, or maybe you can add to this, again, coming back to our journey to deal with our truthful qualities, which you already expressed in the book.
You know, that that theme of being gentle with yourself is very much a part of the work that I'm involved with. You know, I work with a lot of messengers, and you know, for one person it might be Jesus, another person it might be Mother Mary, another one it might be an ancestor, and in all of them, the gentleness is about being loving toward yourself. And being loving, you know, just like what you're talking about, sometimes loving is being firm with yourself and telling yourself the truth. You know, the truth for me is I kept looking at a lot of things as, wow, the truth is I really don't want to do this. And I have to be okay with that, because if I'm not willing to do something, then I can't expect to get the result that someone else is getting because they are willing to do something. And I see this in our world a lot, where, you know, people, you know, they want fame and they want money and they want to do all these things, but they don't want to show up, and they're not willing to do what it takes. And I'm not talking about hard work, because I really am very strongly opposed to the idea of, you know, just running around doing a bunch of stuff. You know, I don't think that's required. And I don't think that we're meant to struggle and suffer and all of that. At the same time, you know, this idea of being loving toward ourselves and gentle is being okay with whatever you're feeling in the moment. Okay, I'm feeling raw right now. That's enough for today. Or I'm feeling like I'm exhausted. I need a rest. Go take a nap. Great. And most people's interior lives, from what I get, what I have gotten to see, I've been privileged to be shown by many people, and also my own interior life of my inner thoughts, is that most of us are really, really brutal to ourselves. And so the contrast of be gentle, and that gentleness as I'm relating it to, you know, really be loving. You know, sometimes it's firm and sometimes it's not. It just is what it is in that moment. And be okay with that.
We just touched, I believe, beautiful but very sharp tip of your life, of your experiences. I hope we can continue. I hope that we can have somewhat an expansion in what you said into more of real life examples. I certainly would love to ask you some concrete questions. How would you do certain things in that situation? And how would you do certain things in this situation? But we have to think about the time, which is up. And I have to thank PBS, which I will do after finish of our interview. But as it is, we already having their generous extension of the time. Tina, I wanted to ask you if you can kindly tell us where we can find you, your website, again, the name of the book, and how people can get in touch with you. I think you will do a much better job than I will in this respect.
Yes, I can be found on the web at tinaferguson.com, TINAFERGUSON.com. And I blog pretty regularly, and you know, I have a my book is available. My book's available also through Amazon and Barnes and Noble, and you can find it online. And you know, anyone who wants to get in touch with me can do that. And I'm on Facebook and Twitter and all that. If you put my name in, I'll come right up.
Well, you are not only very profound, but you're very modern as well.
I have to thank my darling husband for that, because I am so not the techie. I can format a book, but, you know, social media, yeah. It's a lot of energy out there.
We are thanking him all from every point, which was so helpful to you. And the help which you not only deserve, but so generously sharing with others. I sincerely hope that this is just the beginning of our acquaintance, of our tremendously memorable exchange. And I wish you the most of prosperity, which is already so flourishing. And congratulations for conquering quite a challenging obstacles you conquered as a fantastic human being.
Thank you for letting me be here, Lena. I really enjoyed it. You're a fantastic interviewer.
Well, thank you. Thank you so, so much. I'm melting away. And on this speechless note, we will say warm goodbye or until soon to Tina Ferguson. And we will listen to our final episode of music by Julian Lampert. And then I will have a few post words of this very memorable program. And with my final thoughts, thanks to BBS again and many, many more times, which I hope I will have privilege to express. That was your Lena Life. Until next Tuesday, and have a wonderful the rest of the day. Goodbye.
Thank you.